Well, it's my great pleasure today to welcome Dan Renshaw down from the mountain where he has been. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Now, when I say down from the mountain, you are down from the real mountain. You live, if I understand correctly, up there at Hatcher Pass, beyond the gate, which is sometimes closed.
Yeah. From now on, mostly closed, right?
Okay. And describe to people who perhaps do not know that, where's that located? Go up to Hatcher Pass, and then where are you?
Prominent feature is the Independence Mine State Historical Park. The park is a buffer between me and the rest of the world. I'm beyond it, at the Gold Court Mine.
Okay. Okay.
The Gold Court preceded in development, preceded the Independence. I have accumulated, more or less by default, because of my great age, all kinds of stories about the Willow Creek Mining District, and it's so hard to describe a place or even a event and isolate it. There is so much wonderful history up there.
So give us a kind of a approximation of how long you've been up there.
I showed up in July of 1940. At that time, I had to be carried in, a one-year-old.
Well, you and I share us. I can't quite remember 1940, but I was carried around in 1940 as well.
Okay. We have that in common.
And who would have brought you there?
My father came into the mining district. He had been in Alaska previously, but he had been sent there. At that time, in the 1990s, gold mining was a big deal. It had been from the Klondike, just a few years removed, really,
right
in time. But there had been a great interest on the part of the general public about gold mining itself. For example, a large gold mine in Juneau, the AJ mine, was actually part of the Dow Jones 30 Industrials. It was that big a deal. But there had been a lot of wonderful news in the papers on the West Coast about fabulous things happening in the Willow Creek mining district. So a group of investors in Seattle sent my father up to see if they couldn't find something, part of the properties that were underdeveloped that they might have a part in. So he showed up in real early spring of, that would have been 1939. He had a lot of equipment with him that had been offloaded at Willow, and then he was anxious to get started. I'm not sure how he ended up with his first piece of property, but I have a feeling he knew Charlie Barthoff, and he probably bought it from Charlie. The name Barthoff is one that anybody that has any appreciation of the history of the Willow Creek District knows, the Barthoff family. My father got started on what was called the sheared claims, so named by Charlie. As he was getting under development, he was visited one day by Charlie, and the other owner of the Gold Court mine, William Horning. They had met my father previously down at Latouche Island when my father was dismantling the Beetson mine. This is out of Seward.
So he'd had in this game.
He did. He was self-educated, but well-educated in a lot of aspects of both mining, and his real love was electrical work. He was very good at understanding electricity. Anyway, Charlie and Bill Horning asked him to come visiting over at the Gold Court mine. They were quite elderly. They wanted to retire, and they knew of his interest to find a property to develop. So he came visiting midsummer of 1939 and liked what he saw. And they worked out a deal for an option on the property. And in those days, your best shot at communicating was telegraph. He telegraphed his investors and told them of the change. They approved of it. So late summer of 1939, he moves everything to the Gold Court line, which at the time there was wasn't much there.
Mm-hmm. So 1939, there was a presence here in Palmer a few years. But I'm just, in my own imagining, thinking, okay, coming today, we have our own means of traveling, coming to Hatcher Pass, and there's a nice paved road up there. What would it have been like to have, I assume, arrived in Palmer and then go from here to Hatcher Pass? What would that trip look like?
Actually, Mike, it was well-developed.
Okay.
Very well-developed. In my repertoire of stories, one of them that is so interesting to me on the development of the local area is the importance of understanding the Alaska Railroad. When the railroad was completed in 1923, the old story was, build it and they'll come, and it didn't work. Because when the railroad was done, Alaska was in a terrible doldrum. The population had crashed. When you look at the census from 1910 compared to 1920, pretty much the same. But what you don't see is this tremendous buildup, partly for the railroad after 1910. And then the crash came with our involvement in World War I, which started in April of 1917. Alaska at the time was mainly populated by young men. They were young men that were both Americans, and they were also immigrants. And a lot of them from the countries that were so terribly involved in this European war. When the call came, they responded. They joined up, they were drafted, they went for defense jobs, they left. And they left Alaska in a terrible situation. There's a lot of aspects to this that I'd like to talk about. But you know,
okay, well, what right now what we're doing, and again, just to remind listeners, this is Mike Malevsky, and I'm talking with Dan Renshaw, who is giving us something of a foretaste of some details about the Hatcher Pass area and kind of a overview and summary of his ability to have both experienced this and to talk about it today. So you arrive then, and just to give a kind of a picture here of your presence in Hatcher Pass, from those early days to the present time, have you lived continuously in Hatcher Pass, or have you taken time to go away?
I had a very wonderful experience as a consulting engineer, Mike. I started out at an age when others scoffed at, you know, I had no right to be putting myself forward as a consultant, but it worked very, very well. I had a list of clients in the early days. This would have been in the early 70s.
Okay.
That were fabulous all over Alaska. And I had an office in Anchorage. And I had a home in Anchorage at the time also, so in support of the office. Raised a family there. But I was always coming back to the mine. It was always the primary focus for the part of me that was desiring spend time up there. I finally moved back, retired, clients are all taken care of. I'm wanting to do something different, wanting to do some writing. So starting in September of 07, I gave it a try. I fixed up an old cabin, older than I am, and I put new windows in. I did a lot of things for insulating to try to make it possible to survive there for the winter. And the winter of 07-08 was fabulous. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. It was in every way exceeded my expectations. And so that's what I've been doing ever since.
Well, one of the things that people are aware of is, at least in many of the people that I speak with, their memory is a changing climate, changing weather patterns in the Hatcher Pass area. And you are an incredible resource because you have been there for a long time and you're living up there now. Any sort of summary comment about how climate change is affecting life at Hatcher Pass?
Oh, dramatically. In many, many ways, Mike. For example, one of the things I've really noticed over my tenure has been it used to be all along what's now known as Marmot Mountain, there was nothing but open meadows full of the most fabulous wildflowers. There were, for example, you could go wild, well, I keep wanting to say wildfire, these wildflower picking and find, for example, violets with stalks that were a foot high, with huge blossoms on it. All of that's changed. All of that's gone. What's taken its place is brush. The incursion of brush has been, both alder and willow, has just been overwhelming. And trees. There were never any trees other than in the canyon.
Right.
And the weather itself has dramatically changed. Not very long ago, it was an annual event that snow sleds would come off of the south side of Marmot Mountain and go all the way down to the Little Susitna River. A huge thing.
The image of that, the thought of that, that's incredible.
Incredible. But this was not an uncommon event to have that. Uh-huh. In recent years. Even the winter of 04-05, which was very high in snow, we had a lot of difficulty fighting roofs at the Goldcord Mine. The buildings were absolutely buried. Even then, we didn't have those snow slides, and that's just so strange to me. And I can only assume that the vegetation change is working with this to restrain the snow sliding.
Okay.
Occasionally we'll get a dramatic slide. One of them, very unfortunately, killed a good friend of mine in an avalanche just a few years ago in an area that since then it really has not slid at all. So these things are spurious now, but they used to be annual.
Okay. Well, one of the things I think that people are aware of is that the trip to Hatcher Pass sometimes is one that is taken as a way to continue on over the pass and down into Willow on the other side. And anyone who has gone up there frequently knows that pretty early in the winter, the road over Hatcher Pass closes and doesn't open until pretty late in the summer. And that's kind of an interesting aspect of things. So I'm curious, in the older days, sometime, was there very much in the way of travel from your location to the Willow side as opposed to coming down here to Palmer?
In the early days, Mike, the road over Hatcher's Pass was always just a trail. It was, to begin with, an Indian trail.
Okay.
Then it was a horse trail, and then it was a killer of a wagon trail, so steep. But it, very late that the Alaska Road Commission developed it into the road that we kind of know today. It had originally a different grade to it. The Willow Creek District developed in two halves. You had the half that was accessed up the Little Susitna River. And then you had the western half, which was accessed up Willow Creek. And the mixing between the two wasn't what you'd call critical. There wasn't a need for a road over Hatcher's Pass necessarily. It finally came, but in the early days, the development all took place in these two halves. One of the first social aspects of just people coming and going between the two halves, when the Independence Mine developed, their main level to begin with was called a 900 level, and they put a 900 crosscut through the mountain that had a portal on the west side, which would have been Upper Willow Creek. And that was used by everybody for access between the two instead of climbing over the pass.
Oh, I never realized that.
Yeah, no, there would be a lot of people. I remember my father would have lots of guests at the Goldcourt mine. And, they'd have a big poker night, and people would come from the Lucky Shot, and they would ski.
Oh, wow.
Ski to that portal, take your skis off, walk through, then ski over to the Goldcourt.
And just the image of that, that's amazing.
Yeah, oh, there's a lot of aspects like that that are kind of little bits and pieces that are lost.
So one, I was listening carefully here. There's sometimes a discussion that I have observed about the name. Is it Hatcher Pass or Hatcher's Pass?
I call it the latter with the possessive.
Possessive, gotcha.
Yeah, Hatcher is credited. Hatcher is such an interesting individual. He came out of Texas. How he actually got here, who knows? There were a lot of people like Hatcher. He called Hope his home down on the Kenai Peninsula.
Right.
He gets credit for being this superior prospector when, in matter of fact, he was just the first guy to happen to walk on a certain ridge and happened to stumble upon an outstanding discovery. And so the whole area kind of gravitates into perpetuating this discovery with using his name. So give him credit. You know, he put a lot of time, money, and effort into the Willow Creek District. It's good that we remember him any way we can.
Sure. Well, I've been up in that area over the years, and I have noticed the refurbishing of a number of the buildings associated with the Independence Mine. You have memories from an earlier time. How well represented would you say the mine is by what is being displayed at the present time?
Gosh, Mike, how would I phrase that? It occupies a middle ground. I'll tell you about the early days. Development there came late.
Okay.
Late meaning the real development of the Willow Creek Mining District took place in two stages. The first stage was prior to World War One. Then there was a period of quiescence, and then there was the movement of the gold price officially from $20 to $35, which stimulated a lot of development starting in the middle 30s. So the middle 30s to World War II is the other half.
Okay.
Independence Mine well documents that latter part. Prior part, you really have to dig to put together all the bits and pieces of that.
Okay. All right. And I know that most recently there's been, as I understand, as a result of some budget cuts, a reduction in the availability of that site to be visited by tourists and others. Any comments about that?
Oh, gosh, it's a controversial thing. When you have a park for a neighbor, why, it can be really good and really bad.
Okay.
For the most part, those folks are awfully nice. I enjoy dealing with them. When I do things differently, well, you know, we all can say that, yeah. And I have no right to make any real comment. It is a lamentable thing. The numbers grow and grow and grow. Mike, you look over the edge of the hill and down at the parking lot below me where the traffic is congested. on a normal weekend, and there's a lot of interest, a lot of people that visit, and it wouldn't it be nice if they could get a more rounded understanding of the history.
Well, so that leads me to a question for you about how have you in the past, or how do you plan to share some of an obvious treasure trove of information? Have you written? Have you spoken? Tell us about that.
Mike, pardon me if I say it this way, but I want to use you.
And
the whole idea is I need some stimulation to get this stuff on paper. I carry it around in my head, and I speak on it, and it's a lovely topic, the history of the Willow Creek Mining District, all of its parts and pieces. But I need to focus. I need to get focused on telling little stories that become the big story.
Well, and that's a service that we can provide. As we're talking here, what I anticipate is that we will be able to take this overview, establishing, if you will, your right to speak, and take it forward to focused talks about different aspects of this whole history of the Willow Creek Mining District.
Yeah.
And maybe just to you know, what I toss that phrase off as if I know what I'm talking about. Where on the map does the Willow Creek?
The Willow Creek as a district, that term, Mike, has legal significance. I'm stuttering because I want to go back and cover more than I should at in the form of an answer. During the Civil War, the Congress decided that they should do something for veterans, and they invented the Homestead Act.
Right.
That was considered to be the family farm. Parallel with that, and following, more difficult because it had more aspects to it that needed to be put together. But shortly after the Homestead Act came the Mining Law of 1872. And it was considered to be the concept of the family mine. So that mining law is still in the books. It's still there. And in that law, it allowed the people that went out into the frontier to develop a mineral deposit and ultimately gain an ownership interest in it. But in the interim to that final ownership interest, there was several steps that were necessary to, for example, have local government. There wasn't any local government. The mining law allowed the miners to have minor meetings to decide social issues as well as technical issues having to do with claims and so on.
Right.
So I'm wandering a little bit here. Bring me back to the topic, would you please?
Okay. Well, you've established it. You put a pin in a time in history that's significant because it's the beginning. So from that point, we have a mining district now called the Willow Creek Mining District. It occupies a place on the map.
Yes, sir.
Where is that?
And that particular, it came out of the mining law. A district was formed initially by a group of people that included some very interesting names. One of them that'll be remembered locally is Mr. Herning. He sat down with the people who had discovered the gold on Willow Creek as a placer mine, and they formulated a beginning mining district. It grew over time, but the beginning was the placer operations on Willow Creek. Mainly where Willow Creek tributary known as Grubstick Gulch comes in. That and Wet Gulch and some of the local area was quite good in placer, but fairly small. This is back in, oddly, the same time frame of discovery of the Klondike, 1897. Okay. But they formulated the group of people which under the law were able to have to be five you know, pardon the expression, white people, that sat down and hammered out the rules and regulations for the mining district. They formulated they nominated a recorder. They nominated a recording location, Kinnick, and they called it the Kinnick Mining District to begin with. It grew because of discoveries of the hard rock.
And right.
So ultimately, Mike, beginning on Willow Creek, down at the area where all of the tree line is located on Willow Creek, from there it continued over Hatcher's Pass and as far east as, I would say, the Snowbird Mine, which those who hike in the area know the pass all the time on the way on the trail to Reed Lakes.
Okay.
So it's not a big mining district, but it's a very important one in that the mines that occupied it were very rich, very good producers.
Okay. Well, Mike Malevsky here with Dan Renshaw, and we've been talking in an overview about those things that he has experienced and some of the observations about a very important part of the area's history involving Hatcher Pass and mining in that area.